Today's show is brought to you by SeatGeek. SeatGeek is designed to make your ticket buying experience easier than ever. SeatGeek saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. And to get you the most bang for your buck, SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. And best of all, our listeners get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code FFB today. That's promo code FFB for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Gary Sanchez is pick 30. I mean, he's not Rob Gronkowski to use football. I mean, that's just ridiculous. He doesn't separate himself from the other players. I mean, there's no way I would
go to the red zone.
There's no way I would do that.
This is the Fantasy Focus Baseball Podcast. Here are your hosts, Tristan Cockcroft and Eric Carabel.
Hi there, and welcome to Fantasy Focus Baseball. It's Monday, March 12th. I'm Eric, he's Tristan, and the rest of our March Madness team today is our fine researcher, Kyle Soppy, editorial watchdog, Leo Howe, and today's producer is Anthony Claudiud. Gentlemen, how are we all today? Everybody happy and warm, I hope?
Madness.
That was fun, yeah.
It's a little warmer, I guess, right?
Well,
did the snow melt yet?
Well, we have a day of warmth, and then it all stops. Baseball feels like warmth, you know, watching.
Yeah, stop thinking about snow. Let's think about Florida and Arizona. Yeah.
So on today's show, we're going to talk about players finding jobs. It's always good when the unemployment rate goes down, and that happened this weekend in baseball. We'll also talk about a few injuries. Tristan's rankings are updated, and Kyle later will expertly read the hash browns. Here is the buzz. All right, so I guess players finding jobs is the big story because there's not a lot of injuries, and I'm not sure anybody cares if the Phillies bat their pitcher eighth. Jake Arrieta. So we had talked about potential landing spots. Turns out he lands with a spot that's very near and dear to my heart. So I wrote about that last night so everybody can read that for themselves. What's your take?
I kind of like the landing spot for him fantasy-wise. I'm sorry, that's where he ended up, because you and I have talked about that a bit over the offseason.
Don't apologize. I mean, the team's better. The Phillies are better today than they were yesterday. Nobody can argue against that.
It's more that they lock him in for a couple of years here, for 3 years, I think, is the final deal. So, do I have questions about years 2 and 3 from a baseball perspective? Sure, but putting that aside, fantasy-wise, it's a good landing spot for him. It's not a great one. I'd say it's an above average. The big concern I have here is just the fact that he struggled against the lefties, which, Eric, you made your point in the blog about that as well, that he's kind of regressing in that regard, and it is a lot more homer-oriented ballpark for the Phillies than people give credit. That could be a concern, but at least he's in the NL East. He's in the National League. I know the NL East is improving a little bit offensively, but I still think there's some opportunities for matchups, and he'll be, what would we say, a top 25 starter borderline, maybe?
Yeah, I guess the question I have, and I don't have an answer to this, is when you do rankings and projections, you look at a lot of three-year rates. Well, his three-year numbers should be really good because of the Cy Young season. How much weight do you give to last year? How much weight do you give to more skills erosion? Like, I guess my question is he going to, are skills eroding even more? Or will he have another year like last year? Because last year's numbers were fine. That's a top 25 starting pitcher, just about top 20. If he does that again, that's fine. That's great. From a fantasy aspect, he's going in round 11. Well, I would take him there. I just wouldn't take him in round 6 or 7.
Well, I go to where exactly he finished among starting pitchers. We had 93rd overall in
he was 24, player. I think, right?
Was it 24? Yeah, I remember it was very close to the borderline of 25. He was also, by the way, 108th in the points-based leagues. So the value was pretty stable regardless of the format we're talking. What do I take here for the three-year average? Yeah, the three-year average is where I begin. I don't like to take just a straight three-year average where I'm putting equal weight on 2015 and 2017. I'll lean a little bit more towards the Marcel mindset of splitting it up where 2017 gets the heaviest weight. A lot of people use the 15% weight on the 2015, 25 for 2016, 60% or so on 2017. You can balance those either way that you want. But what I do is I'll take that number to start, and then I will tweak manually based on the research I saw. And I just said a minute ago about the lefties. The lefties are something that really bothered me a lot, even more than the velocity drop, which is down a little bit for Jake Arrieta. Lefties hit him a lot more effectively last season. 267, 344, 497. To me, that suggests a slight skills downgrade, but it's not catastrophic. This is the problem. He waited so long in the offseason that we have this reaction that it's a catastrophic impact on Arrieta, and he's going to fall apart and finish outside the top 50. No, he's got value.
What's the better value for you? Jake Arrieta in round 11 or Lance Lynn in round 19? He's a one-year deal with the Twins, and obviously that's the American League, and his skills aren't quite the same. But last year, his skills looked pretty similar, actually, to Arrieta's. So, you know, I guess it kind of depends on the makeup of your staff, but Arrieta in round 11, Lance Lynn in round 19. You can only have one of them.
I would take Arrieta in the 11th. I like the question here because I think that there's the case to be made for Lynn at that spot. I think if he's slipping to there, then he ends up being a pretty good value. The reason I would pick Arrieta is I think the skill set is a little bit more secure. I think he's in the better situation. National League versus American League being one thing there. The other is that Lance Lynn's numbers suggested the skills weren't Arrieta's equal even last season. He had a lot of good fortune on balls in play. His ERA FIP differential was nearly 1.4. That's a very wide split. And he pitches to contact. He's not the kind of guy who's going to miss a lot of bats. So I think Lynn is going to be much more matchup oriented of the two.
You know, you can look at the American League Central and say, is that a loaded division for bats? Not really. So, I mean, I don't know if the AL-NL thing matters to me in this case, because Arrieta's ballpark, I mean, and I saw this on Twitter, like, oh, Jake Arrieta has done really well in Citizens Bank Park. That's because he was facing the Phillies. I mean, look at that offense the last 3 years. You can't look at that. I have concerns about both gentlemen, to be honest with you, and I can't imagine I'll be investing in either or Alex Cobb. And one of the points that I made in the blog on Sunday night was, I'm not sure Arrieta is ready for opening day. First of all, he won't pitch opening day. Aaron Nola will, but he may not pitch for the first couple of weeks getting ready for the season. That's something that's a little underrated in this whole mess, right?
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah, it's at this point, because, I mean, if you make the comparison to some of the injury questions, Felix Hernandez immediately comes to mind. We've already been talking about, is a guy ready for opening day? I believe, in fact, Marcus Stroman was one who's already been scratched for opening day, and they're likely looking at the second turn of the rotation. So unless Arrieta has been throwing and building up his pitch counts on his own or in the free agent spring training camp out there, I agree with you. I think it's going to be tough for him to be a full-time starter the first week of the season. That cuts a little bit into his value. And it's the same thing for Lynn.
Look, just be durable and give me 175 innings, and you're a huge upgrade on what the Phillies had. And so is Lance Lynn for the Twins. But from a fantasy aspect, definitely some concerns. And with the hitters that signed this weekend, a little bit of that as well. Mike Moustakas goes back to the Royals, which, look, he just set their franchise record for home runs, didn't he? So it was a great season. I don't see why he can't do that again. Jonathan LaCroix goes to Oakland. Man, I just don't know what to make of that. Now, Oakland didn't really have like a starting catcher that anybody wanted in fantasy anyway, so it's not a big deal. It's not like he's pushing somebody out, nor is Moustakas doing that with the Royals. Nobody was drafting Chesler Cuthbert or whoever else was going to play third base for them. It's weird. All four of these signings, like, nobody on the team that we were thinking of in fantasy is really all that impacted here, right?
Yeah, not much. I think the only one that really is of relevance here for fantasy is that note over the weekend where Ned Yost had said that he might dabble a little bit with Moustakas at first base. So there could be a slight shaving of the plate appearances for Lucas Duda if that comes to fruition. And right now, I'm not going to create any sort of downgrade on Duda because of that. I think Duda's injury risk already baked in the plate appearance projection that we have on the site. I think that's about appropriate. Moustakas... It's strange to see him come back there at that price. That's the baseball perspective. The fantasy perspective, I'd like to have seen him end up in a more homer-friendly ballpark. It's a terrible, terrible power ballpark in KC, but he succeeded last year, so probably the same value gets back in the top 10 third baseman. LaCroix, I hate the destination, don't you, Eric? I mean,
doesn't matter.
Look, yeah,
he had the best destinations in the world last year, and he did nothing. So
yeah,
does that really matter?
The problem. Well, that's why it matters, is that last year he was awful in two of the best hitting environments, and now for the rebound he goes to one of the worst.
Well, when we say awful, I mean he had 6 home runs. Well, that's awful compared to the 24 he hit the season before. But he did take walks. He did get on base. I could see him bouncing back to hit like 290. I just don't know if I can project double-digit home runs anymore. And defensively, man,
yeah.
I, I don't know about that. I mean, like, obviously I'm not going to downgrade Kendall Graveman or anything like that just because LeCour is the catcher, but he didn't defend all that. He wasn't a good pitch framer.
In the past he was. That's the bothersome part, is that he regressed so poorly in the defensive metrics last year, and then the question has to come up about how much do you trust the defensive metrics for catchers at this point. I don't know. I'm not wild about that landing spot, but I agree with you. I think he could put up those numbers in the best case. I just don't think he's going to be a draftable player in a 10-team ESPN league.
But is he a top 10 catcher? You can make the
case. No.
Why not? He's going 12th right now in ADP. At the back end of the top 10, one of them is Yasmani Grandel, who I have no idea if he's getting 400 bats. One is Mike Zunino, who might not hit his weight or mine. So two Dodgers catchers. Austin Barnes is number 10. So obviously something's already wrong there. Two Dodgers catchers in the top 10. They're not going to finish there. So LaCroix is in the pack with Wilson Ramos, Wellington Castillo, and Austin Hedges. Why is he not worth that?
Right. And for me, I mean, I'm kind of thinking we must be missing Wilson Ramos here, who's in my top 10. It is going to be a personal preference matter as to whether you feel he's the 10th best catcher. For me, I'm going to take Zunino, definitively better power. I know the batting average is a risk. Wilson Ramos, I think he rebounds getting another year away from that surgery. And Wellington Castillo, I'll take Wellington Castillo in Chicago over LaCroix in Oakland any day.
Oh, I will too. Yeah, I don't have LaCroix in my top 10. I have Castillo in my top 10, and I've already invested him in a couple of leagues.
Yep,
but I'm not
taking
any catcher in ESPN league until the last round anyway, whether it's a points league or a standard, or a roto, I mean, a standard is points, because you only need one.
Right. So what's going to end up happening is that there's probably going to be somebody in your league who ends up with a catcher either on their bench or in their utility spot, or they end up with two catchers and put Posey at first base
or something like that. Why would you take two catchers?
It's not, but the ultimate result for us in the standard game is that if you're the last guy to get a catcher and 12 already went and LaCroix's out there, I don't think you're going to be unhappy. But that's the last pick you got in the draft.
In one of our mocks, I think I took Yadier Molina in the final round. I was like, that's where I'll take my catcher. I don't know why everybody else doesn't do this. I mean, Gary Sanchez's ADP right now is like number 30. Posey is like 60, and Wilson Contreras is like 80. Well, that's fine. They're difference makers. They're better than the other guys. But I don't want them. I'd rather have an outfielder or a good first baseman in those picks or a starting pitcher. Like, you can get Arrieta, right where Salvador Perez is going. Well, I mean, I'm not the biggest Arrieta fan, but I would still take Arrieta over Salvador Perez, wouldn't you?
Yeah, but I mean, there's no greater position for the philosophical debate here than catcher. There are people who do not want to dip into the replacement pool. They don't. They are terrified, and they are going to spend the premium for catchers. And hey, that's great. If that's the way you feel and you're afraid of that, be my guest. It's not the way you or I play. And the other thing, too, is I think some people absorb the mentality of the two-catcher league into the standard one-catcher game, which, by the way, is just a complete mistake. But I have seen people do that. They will go out there on the web and they will look at sources that have rankings that are based on a two-catcher, specific two-catcher, and often a 15-team league, so 30 catchers are starting, and then they apply it to our game. Big mistake.
How would your rankings differ at catcher if we allowed two starting catchers?
If we allowed two starting catchers, it would be these guys would move up a good amount. I mean, Sanchez probably is the least affected because he already is so good compared to replacement that he's already being ranked about appropriately. Maybe he moves up 5-10 spots. The guys who would benefit are the known commodities, the safe guys. You mentioned Molina a minute ago, Eric. Buster Posey probably would. Wilson Contreras, just because of the upside, I think would. Perez's power and Gattis's power become more appealing. And Zunino's as well. The guys who I'd say there's 14, 15 known commodities? Would you agree?
Yeah, I'd say that's fair. So in a two-catcher league, if you don't want to be stuck with Tucker Barnhart as your second catcher, I mean, I don't have any problem with that, especially like in an auction, $1 catcher, I'd be fine with that.
Well, in an auction, you have more control. In the draft format,
I'd probably get a guy I could trust, but it wouldn't be one of the top. I mean, Gary Sanchez at pick 30. I mean, he's not Rob Gronkowski to use football. I mean, that's just ridiculous. He doesn't have the track record. He doesn't separate himself like from the other players. I mean,
there's
no way I would do that. But would I get one catcher that I could? I would get probably Yadi or Zunino or Wilson Ramos, and then my second catcher would still be a guy really late, even if it's like Tyler. Tyler Flowers had a good year. Like, I'd be he fine did. With him as my second catcher.
You and I have both done a good number of leagues that do this, where they start as many as 30 different catchers, and I'm finding that there is a soft spot for value there in the range of rounds 11 to 20 for catchers. And Eric, as you said, Molina has been falling very nicely as
Nobody
a value.
Wants him. Yeah,
the only big problem with waiting at the end here, you mentioned Barnhart. I'm with you on that. I'd ask where you rank Barnhart, because I've got him 22nd at catcher. So it means that if your league is drafting that position aggressively, you could get cornered into having a weak starting catcher, your number two catcher.
Look,
you could have a Christian
second,
Vasquez or
if
something.
My second catcher hits seven homers, knocks in 50, and bats 260, that's okay. I don't want him batting 180. I don't want him knocking in no runs. I no longer want who's the Pirates catcher? Cervelli. I don't want that. Like, nor do I don't know. I just.
But for the value price point, you're hoping that's your last pick.
Yes.
And that's the right move, I think.
All right. Injuries from this weekend. Robinson Cano, I think he's having an MRI today on his hamstring. Hopefully that's no big deal, because the season starts in 17 days, which is weird. Because normally we think of March, like, we're at March Madness, right? I mean, the brackets were out last night. And when that happens, I still think, all right, well, I still got a couple more weeks. Well, you don't really. You know, I mean, it's like it's coming sooner than you think, because it's starting in late March. It's not starting on a Sunday night or a Monday afternoon in Cincinnati. It's on a Thursday, which is really weird, right? It starts Thursday.
It does start, and everybody's going to play that Thursday.
Is that right? Every team's in action.
Every team will play on that Thursday.
You know, I probably should ask this. You know what? Since our editorial watchdog Leo Howell is here, let's bring him in. Now, it's a little bit early to worry about this, but, you know, plan ahead is my advice. So how's that going to work? Because that's going to be like a four-day week. Is the first week of the season going to be basically that 4 days plus the first full week?
I have not confirmed that yet. I know that typically around the All-Star break, we do combine them into bigger weeks rather than using one single smaller week. And so that would be the assumption. But I will follow up on that, because I want to give everyone an informed answer on that.
You're probably really mad at me right now for asking. But that's for head-to-head.
No.
People are going to ask.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
I mean, you know,
we'll have it. We got to plan forecaster stuff in daily notes, so it's going to be. We'll know.
Right.
It's usually tied together, though.
Yeah, I would assume so.
I think it's going to be a long week, head to head. Other injuries that we've got here. So Luis Gajara, you like him, the Braves starter. This is an ankle. Corey Knebel was taken out mid inning of a weekend outing with a knee injury, but he says it's no big deal. But you know, that was a great year, and if there's any concern at all, he would not be a top 100 guy. He's not already for me. Anthony DeSclafani, the Reds, with another oblique. Now I'm thinking, you know, can you at least start any games this year?
And diminished velocity in that outing.
Yeah. And then Ohtani, you know, one good outing, one bad outing. I'm in a league where we had keepers, and Ohtani probably would have been the first pick in this draft. And a guy that both you and I know didn't take him. He went the hometown pick and took Rafael Devers, which I can make the case easily for.
Yeah.
We only kept, I think, six in that league. So, and he likes the Red Sox. Devers was available. I have no problem with that. I think I might have done the same thing.
In a dynasty league.
A dynasty. What do you think of Ohtani? I don't know what to make of Ohtani. I mean, Keith Law had a write-up where he's like ripping him. He wasn't throwing hard. His stuff wasn't breaking right. And then over the weekend, everybody says he was fine. That's the thing. We're so overreactive now. So any of these injuries mean anything to you?
The Gohara one is bothersome because he was in the bin of has to fight for a rotation spot. I think he was very likely to make it, but this is going to set him back. It's going to hurt him in the competition, and that's a problem because he has some of the highest upside of any of the Braves prospects. I've mentioned this before. Like, the guys who are in the battles are the ones who you don't want to see taking setbacks here. The Stroman one I mentioned before is of legitimate concern. That's not improving much. Michael Fulmer and Drew Pomerantz, I feel like they got a little bit of a bounce back this weekend. Get into the other specific one. Knebel's not a big concern to me. Eric, as you said, he's not too concerned about that injury so far. And I'm missing one, right?
I don't know. All right, so these injuries seem minor. Is there any statistics that you've looked at where you say, that kind of matters? I'm seeing a lot of Greinke, not hate, but
Greinke,
anti-love.
Somebody made – well, this is the thing. Greinke came out to the media and he said that he didn't feel like he had – I think the quote was, he says, I worried maybe I don't have it anymore. I think that was what it was that he said. And somebody made this point that he often kind of kids around with the media this way, that he sort of doubts himself. And then he comes back and he's great. So are we really going to panic over the fact that he had that so-so outing?
To,
it's one game and he's a veteran.
I remember last spring I was having this conversation where Greinke was not hitting 90 on the gun. And I was thinking, oh, let's worry about Greinke. And I downgraded him. He had a monster season. So I don't want to do that again. You know, like, I think Zach Greinke is really good, and I don't think he really cares about these spring outings. So the fact that he was throwing 85 miles per hour last in his last outing, I'm not sure it matters to me very much.
We're also at the point where, remember the dead arm. People don't talk up the dead arm enough. There's a lull in terms of velocity for pitchers at this period of time, and it does often extend into about April 15th or 20th. So be prepared for that. I remember doing research about CeCe Sabathia with this several years ago. Yeah, and he did end up kind of cooling later in his career. I get that. But this is the dead arm phase. You're going to hear a lot of pitchers say it's kind of like, oh, yeah, arm's not feeling so great, and it's a 1 or 2 week blip. Don't panic just over that specific little thing.
Yeah, I don't know what Greinke's ADP right now is. It's got to be top 20 starting pitch. Yeah, he's number 10.
Oh, he's got to be.
So he's going in the fourth round of ESPN Average Live Drafts. I don't think I'm moving him. Like, your rankings were updated today. Did you move him, or did you move Jake DeGrom at all?
Oh, no. Well, DeGrom is one I still have my eye on, but so far, so good, I think, with him. It's more a matter of, is he going to get pushed to the back of the rotation at the beginning of the year? In Greinke's case, I'd also ask, Eric, you said reactionary. 2 weeks ago, we're like, oh, Greinke's going to be great because they have the humidor, and now we're going to panic? I mean, we can't do this.
I'll be honest, when I heard of the humidor thing, the first guy I thought it was not Greinke, it was Robbie Ray. And the second guy was probably Jake Lamb. Those are the two guys that I think are affected the most. Not Goldschmidt and not Greinke. I mean, obviously Goldschmidt wouldn't be as good. I dropped him from like number 3 to like number 6. But Robbie Ray, I moved up more in relation to what Greinke did. So
my top 3 were Tomas was first. I know, way down the list. But I do think it very, very, very directly impacts him.
I don't even think he's going to play. I don't think he matters.
Oh, I agree. I think, I mean, a lot has happened since. But the first thing I thought is Tomas's skills are ones that are going to be very deflated by this. Lamb second. And I'm with you, Eric. I think Robbie Ray gets affected more. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that Ray's underlying skills have been consistent the past 2 years. But the good fortune improved last year. He was very unlucky in 2016 and pretty lucky last year. And I wondered whether it would settle in the middle. With the humidor, it gives a better chance he could repeat the good luck.
I mean, I look at Arizona's outfield right now, and I see A.J. Pollock probably leading off. Steven Souza in left, David Peralta in right, all pretty good players that should bat like in the top 4 or 5 of their lineup.
And Jared Dyson.
Jared Dyson, who is going to play, but probably not going to steal 30 bases unless you get an injury, which you could always get with any of these guys, of course. I'm not even sure Yasmani Tomas makes the team. I mean, I guess he probably makes it like the way Pablo Sandoval is making the Giants. I mean, somebody's got to make the team.
There's talk they might cut him, but the problem is the contract.
Why would you play a guy like that over Dyson? Like, now, neither are starters, but like in this new era where everybody knows so much, Jarrod Dyson's a much better player than Yasmani Tomas, but one of them could hit 30 home runs, the other could steal 30 bases, but defense matters. Like, well, it's really important.
They couldn't be more polar opposite players is
Absolutely.
The problem.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, like, one's great defensively, one is not. One's all power, one is no power, and is all speed. I agree with you. I think Dyson's the superior overall player here. The problem with Tomas is he's the Jacoby Ellsbury of the National League, where you need to kind of bait somebody into taking that contract, or at least a chunk of it, just like the Yankees are in that situation with Ellsbury, and I think that they're going to try to audition him a little bit, and the ultimate result might be he gets cut.
You know, there's no closer situation that's as interesting to me right now as Arizona's. Like, there's other situations where I say, well, I don't know the closer, okay? Like I think, actually, to be honest, that Nate Jones is going to pass Joaquin Soria in White Sox.
Four of them got interesting, and that's one of them. And yours is one of the four, too. The other two, by the way, are L.A. and Texas.
Phillies? Why are the Phillies interesting?
Phillies? Oh. No. The one you just picked, Arizona.
Arizona,
Chicago,
okay.
L.A., and Texas, I think, got interesting over the past week.
I think, I read that Cam Bedrosian is now in the lead over Blake Parker. I don't know who said it or what it means.
I know.
But it wouldn't surprise me one bit. I just think that Arizona, the reason why Arizona is most interesting to me is because if you name a White Sox or, you know, Angels closer, I'm not going to put them in my top 10. But if I was sure Archie Bradley was the closer, he might get there. He would leap ahead of like Wade Davis, Brandon Morrow, Rodas Vizcaino. He might be right on par with me with Ken Giles. If I knew Archie Bradley was their closer and they were saying, oh, he's our man, like I think he might be a top 10 guy. But right now, I don't know what to make of the situation. So
I
he's not.
With you. I think that, in fact, he's probably the Rice Iglesias of a year-ish to a year and a half ago. Very, very similar here, where a starter was converted to relief, and if he got that closer job, you'd love those ratio stats
absolutely.
Adding the saves on top.
I mean, but he's Knable from last year if he gets that closer job.
I, that's it.
But you know, you say to me, well, like the White Sox, you know, you say Miami, oh yeah, Drew Steckenrider, maybe Brad Ziegler, oh, that's really exciting for their 60 wins. None of that matters that much to me. We'll talk about every situation and who the closer is, of course.
Right.
I mean, Greg Holland still is out there. Who's still out there? Holland, Neil Walker, and Alex Cobb are the main three, right?
Yeah, I feel like there was one more when I was just scrolling down my free agent list, so I'm calling it up while we.
I mean, wherever Holland goes is a big deal if he gets the closing job. So
that's where Texas comes into play, is that there was a little bit of a whisper about could Texas be interested in Greg Holland. We heard previously L.A. with the Angels, I mentioned before. I don't think that's necessarily
going to happen. They don't want to block Tim Lincecum. What's wrong with you? Why would they do that?
I know. I don't. Hey, you know, and I said on Thursday that I felt like Alex Claudio. Yeah. Alex Claudio is not a bad pitcher
of
here.
Of course
either.
Not.
There's no reason to spend the money on it. I mean, they have a decent number of arms that they could consider. They're the only reason I think they're trying to add another reliever is that they're trying to put Mike Minor into the rotation and they're trying to put Matt Bush into the rotation.
That's already failed. I saw that this week. He's going back to the bullpen as he should.
Right, but then now you have to get him ramped up to be a prominent relief pitcher. Where's he settling in the pecking order? Is Matt Bush going to be the next in line? I don't think so.
All right, well, here's what's next. A word from MeUndies. You want to look good in your underwear and be comfortable, right? Who doesn't? Don't sacrifice style or comfort. Check out MeUndies. They're the perfect balance of comfortable fit. Every month, they have new and exciting prints, and they arrive at your door in a fun bag. MeUndies uses Lenzing Micromoto in their underwear. It's a sustainably sourced, naturally soft fiber that starts with beechwood trees and ends with the most amazing fabric you've ever experienced. The results have been downright dreamy. Their adventurous prints and designs are all limited edition, and new patterns are released every few weeks on a rolling basis. MeUndies has an exclusive offer for our listeners. For any first-time purchasers, when you purchase any MeUndies, you get 20% off and free shipping. They're so sure you'll love their underwear, they offer a 100% satisfaction guarantee. And if you don't love your first pair, you get a full refund. But who wouldn't love it? This is a no-brainer. Get 20% off a pair of the most comfortable undies you will ever put on. To get your 20% off your first pair, free shipping, and a 100% satisfaction guarantee, go to MeUndies.com/FFB. That's MeUndies.com/FFB. Next up, hash browns. All right, here we go. We got some cool music. Anthony's been drinking the Kool-Aid on this music.
I mean, it's great music. So
we had an opportunity to do something really cool, change it up.
Does Anthony's anybody actually drink Kool-Aid, though? Do you guys? Come on.
It's
we say we drink the Kool-Aid, but really?
Look, if I looked, there's probably like a National Kool-Aid Day for all we know, right?
I'm on
it's
it.
Like one of the funniest things.
Kyle's on it.
Yeah, Kyle, what is it?
Today's National Napping Day. Give me about 5 minutes. And
by the way, one of the funniest things I saw over the past couple of weeks was there was somebody who did a science video on could the Kool-Aid man crash through a wall. Hilarious.
If he was going to do it, it would be on August 10th, National Kool-Aid Day.
Oh, man.
Today's Friday for those keeping track at home.
Today's National Napping Day and National Plant a Flower Day, but I can't really plant a flower. I guess I could move some of the snow aside. All right, let's plant one
in a pot inside.
Let's get some questions here.
Alrighty, Ryan has an OPS league instead of batting average. He's making the jump this year in a 5x5 league. Who are some players that gain significant value in this format over the traditional batting average categories?
Oh, I actually prefer leagues like that, Tristan, now that don't count batting average, because I feel like there's so many players that we just automatically say, well, I don't want that guy because of batting average. Like, either Chris Davis. Joey Gallo in an OPS league could be like a top 50 pick easily, right?
Yeah, that's. I'm actually not fond of the idea of replacing batting average with on base percent or with on base with OPS. I like the ones that replace it with on base percentage more, or if they add on base and slugging. If you put OPS in there, Eric, you're right. I mean, like Chris Davis, the Orioles guy, becomes really relevant, and in a regular league, he's kind of ordinary.
Joey Gallo had an 869 OPS last year.
It's huge for him.
I mean, he's the biggest difference here. It's really not Chris Davis because he didn't do much else anyway.
But Gallo's going to be draftable in both formats. It's that Chris Davis, the Orioles guy, is going to be one of the last picks in a standard league, and he's probably going to be a top 100 player nearly with this one.
I mean, I have a on-base percentage league instead of batting average where Joey Votto's a top 10 pick.
Actually, Cody Bellinger probably becomes a borderline first-round pick in this league.
But then, you know, not all of the guys who hit for a low batting average took walks. Like, this doesn't, like, change. Like, my God, I didn't even realize it was a slow. Rougned Odor had a 252 on base.
Yep.
That's unbelievable.
Yep.
Oh, man.
And, man, his metrics on swinging on strikes
are
not good.
Forget about it. But in a general sense, if you have a low batting average, but you can at least take a walk, like, not all these guys with low batting averages had decent OPSs. I mean, Gallo really stands out. But, like, Mark Trumbo, he wasn't taking walks. So it doesn't change him all that much. Even in Ian Kinsler. Ugh.
It's going to benefit guys, I think, who are in that 250, 260 range, who have good plate discipline skills. So we mentioned a few of those.
Steven Souza would be a guy. Because he walks a lot.
What's his on base? Yeah,
351 last year. That's a guy who obviously, Matt Carpenter, if he continues to hit for a low batting average, he'd move up way up. He had 100 walks.
Not worried about the injury with him?
You know, I'm not sure Matt Carpenter starts the season active. I think he might start the year on the DL, which is not that big a deal to me because now it's only a week.
I think it might deflate his draft value to the point he is a relative bargain.
In fact, he'd probably come back during the first week since the first week's going to be a long week.
Yeah. Yeah, and in that case, what I would do is I would just pump the 11 game period there and then start him for week two, and yeah, you're fine. Edwin Encarnacion sticking at first base. Edwin Encarnacion is a guy who's so in batting average, but exceptional in the
Logan
slugging
Morrison.
And on base.
Logan Morrison stands out.
Oh, yeah.
Low batting average, but I mean, if you take away, if you stop looking at his 246 batting average and you look more at his 353 on base, that's an 870 OPS he had. He's like Gallo.
Trying to think of who really suffers in this.
You know, nobody thinks Logan Morrison's doing that again except me, right? I feel like I'm the only person that thinks that's repeatable.
Repeatable, yeah. You're probably the only one.
Why is that not repeatable? I don't get it.
It was an unusually good year for 1 year, and pitchers did make some adjustments to him in the second half, but I don't think he regresses to the very ordinary player he was before. I think he has elevated himself to a good amount of utility in fantasy.
All right. So is Kyle. What's next?
I appreciate that, Eric. I've got some utility left in me, if nothing else.
Kyle, should I play Steph Curry this week in a weekly?
No.
I need to know.
I don't think you do right now. They have
critical weeks.
What's the motivation to play them? They don't care if they get the one or two seed.
Right? Sure. I mean, they don't care. Oh, man, I have a basketball team just falling apart. That's the last week of the regular season in a head-to-head. And I need to win it.
Not a good time to sit Steph.
No.
Yeah.
All right, what's your question? Connor's wondering if a 65-35 spending split is still the way to go in auction leagues, given the shallowish nature of starting pitching, along with the depth of power.
Tristan, do you ever go into an auction saying I'm going to spend 65% on hitting, or is it just kind of come to you?
I generally have a ballpark number, and I'm very reliant on the 70-30, 70% hitting, 30% pitching, and I'm flexible with that. Sometimes I will fall beneath that and get to closer to the 65-35 a lot of people talk about. I was 72-28 in labor, I believe it was.
If we take into account that obviously prices are going to be different in an actual auction than when we prepare for them, why is it important to go in saying I want to have this split? Why does that matter so much?
That's a good question. I can't give you,
because I don't believe
answer.
In it. Like I my goal in that auction last week was roughly 200 on hitting, and I ended up spending a little bit more, like 210. Like, why is that important if you end up with a pitching staff you like?
So one reason why is that if you don't come up with a projected percentage, you actually won't enter the auction with a proper auction sheet, like a price sheet to bid off of. And what will end up happening is what happened to me in the 02 labor draft, which was I went in seeking bargains and I ended up spending, I think, like $110 on pitching. So I went way over that percentage just because all of the bargains on my sheet ended up being on the pitching side.
02. How do you remember? I don't remember last week.
I was just
going to
say that.
What's
good thing
you
moved
you?
On from that 02 draft debacle.
Yeah,
Tristan.
Tristan, yeah, let it go. Let it go. 02.
It worked out.
Oh, two. It's 18. It's,
yeah, I remember following that in the newspaper when I was a sophomore in high school.
I was five. I can't believe you're bringing up 02. I literally don't remember last week's auction, and you're talking about 02.
You got to learn lessons from the auctions. I'm telling you.
That's why Tristan wins his league. To answer the question, I think, because I think Tristan's done it, and I've kind of done it too, is the shallowest nature of starting pitcher, does that make you spend more on pitching than you did in previous seasons?
I think it makes me more apt to pay for the premium pitcher, and it makes me more apt to go for the cheaper back end of my staff. I'm going to take more speculative bids late and not spend very much on it. I don't think the 2, 3, and 4 starters matter this year. I don't. Do you?
Well,
are you going to spend, let's put it this way, are you going to buy four $15 pitchers,
no.
Or would you rather have a 30 and
I always would rather, well, I would never spend third on any pitcher, but like what I did in my auction last week, I had a $20 starter and then everybody else was five or less. I like doing that because I feel like the difference in a $10 or $12 starter is not that great between the difference of like $3 to $5 starter in a lot of cases.
Mm-hmm.
And what I really wanted to do was just have depth. I have so much depth, so I don't care that DeSclafani is going to miss the first, month or whatever, because I have somebody just as good as him on reserve in that league. So that's why in most drafts, what I end up doing is my entire bench is starting pitchers.
Yep.
So if somebody gets hurt, or especially in that league, but like for an ESPN standard league or a points league, my bench is going to be starting pitchers with upside. It's not going to be somebody like a John Lackey, or to think of someone active. I'm trying to think, like it's not going to be Jared Eichhoff. It's going to be somebody who has the upside to be great, like a Vince Velasquez, for example. He could be great with that strikeout rate. Pivetta could be great.
Eichhoff could be a very good last pick in the ESPN Standard League because you're cutting him when you get your streaming guy for the first matchups.
Why is he a good pick if you're cutting him?
Because I like making sure that last spot is available.
Wow, so the second pick in this draft just went, and it still wasn't Ohtani.
Wow, who was it?
It was Acuna, which again, I agree.
Oh, okay, yeah. See, wow. You have a lot of good prospects. And the one I've got coming up Thursday, believe me, Ohtani's the guaranteed number one pick.
I have a fourth pick. I'm going to have to take Ohtani. Would you take Robles over? Oh.
How long is the dynasty?
It's only three outfielders, so it's not, and it's not a lot of keepers. I would take Ohtani or future Hall of Famer Scott Kingery, and he is going to the Hall of Fame. What's up next?
I'd like to apologize to Tristan. Skater Boy by Avril Lavigne came out in 2002, and I remember that song. So I think I think 2002 was a memorable year.
You really are digging up Skater Boy?
Are you making up names now?
Skater Boy, Lose Yourself by Eminem if you want
spell
to.
Spell it.
The top of the list.
You're looking at it. Eric can't spell the name of the title.
No way.
Nope, he can't.
What?
Because nobody should be able to.
What are you talking about?
Spell Eminem? Skater Boy for me.
You mean what it was on that album?
Yep.
All right, enough.
Spell either word correctly.
What, did it have an X in it? I don't know.
Isn't it B-O-I?
And it is B-O-I.
Okay.
Well, SK8 or I think R something.
Ask me who's Arizona shortstop. I know that. Ask me who, April Lavigne is. I don't, okay?
Priorities straight. Avril Lavigne. At least pronounce the name right. All right. Michael's got a question here. You mentioned the labor draft, Eric, that you were at over this weekend and stayed at. He's wondering about the pitching heavy strategy. We saw it go crazy heavy in labor. He's wondering if that's a more viable strategy in mixed leagues, given that your offense will obviously take a hit. But again, the depth of hitting, can you build an offense in the later rounds?
What people aren't getting here is that the fact that there is more power doesn't mean you can wait on power. It means you need more power to compete in the category. That's exactly what it means. It doesn't mean you should wait until round 20 and get your power. It means get even more power than ever. Like 5 years ago, if we said you needed, for example, 240 home runs to win that league, now it's like 280, 290, 300. So I think it's become even more important to get power and safe power. So, and I don't think it was a pitching heavy stretch. Certainly it wasn't by me. I only spent like $50 on my pitchers and a 260. But I think everybody was getting high prices in NL, not in AL labor. But on the NL side, yes, people were overbidding on hitters. They were overbidding on middle-class hitters, top starters, medium starters, closers. I couldn't believe what was happening, and that's why I was able to end up with what I wanted to get. It may not compete, but it was what I wanted. I don't think it makes more sense to go all in on pitching. I think it makes more sense to go all in on hitting.
What he said about the power. This is the quarterback thing for football. You are lazy if you say, oh, wait on quarterbacks. You better have a strategy. It's not just wait on quarterbacks. There's value in there and you need to maximize it. The same thing with power. As Eric said, you've still got to get it. You don't just ignore the category. You've still got to get it. This is probably coming down to Dalton's team. This is Clayton Kershaw, Noah Syndergaard, Steven Strasburg, Kenley Jansen. He spent $26+ on each of those. Went, I think, $120 pitching budget in the NL labor.
All right. We have time for one more question, Kyle.
That we do. Bill wants to know where Greg Bird is hitting in the Yankees lineup this season and how patient you can be before cutting ties, and what's his value in a keeper league.
Tristan, that's all you, Yankee guy. Yankee boy, B-O-I.
Please sing that.
No, I will not.
The sad part is I remember that song and I probably could sing it and I really don't want to.
Yes.
Okay, so where's he going to bat in the Yankee lineup? Oh. And do you like? Is he a 30 home run guy? I think he is, right?
I think he is. With health, absolutely, I think he gets there. Where do the Yankees bat him? They are dabbling a little bit with using him in order to split up the right-handed hitters. This is the Stanton, Judge, and Sanchez. So I think there's a decent likelihood you're going to see Bird slotted in regularly between third or fourth. And there is talk that the Yankees are dabbling with Judge leadoff, Bird second, and Stanton third against the left-handed pitchers in order to divide this. So I think Bird's in a very good situation to maximize PAs.
Very interesting, that Yankee lineup. Greg Bird going really late in drafts. I would take him over Duda, wouldn't you?
Yep.
All right. Tournament Challenge is live now on ESPN.com. Brackets lock on Thursday at noon, so don't waste time. We'll be back Thursday to not only share our March Madness winners, of course we will, but also to get you ready for the weekend where drafts will be happening, as we are but 2 weeks away from opening day. That is all for our Monday edition. The season's starting soon. Get your drafts in. Thanks so much to Anthony Calatayude for filling in today as our producer, also Kyle Soppe, Leo Howe, great job, and of course my friend Tristan Cockcroft. I am Eric Carabel. Have an awesome day!
Everything is awesome!
Darkness! It's complicated.
The theme song for the Fantasy Focus was created and performed by Eric Hutchinson. Check out more of his music at erichutchinson.com. Thank you for listening to the Fantasy Focus. For more great podcasts, log on to the iTunes Music Store or Pod Center at espnradio.com.